Thanks for listening to the latest Football Digest podcast, available on all podcast platforms. Subscribe now through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts from, so you don't miss a single episode.
Hello and welcome to the Football Digest podcast. I'm your host, Connor Bromley, and I'm joined today by Joshua Mabu from the Mirror Football. I mean, all of Reach Sport, isn't it? You know, you cover Express and Star as well, don't you? So, busy man who covers a lot of different sport and mainly football. We've got lots to talk about today on this podcast, but the only place to start really is the title race. That's the thing that's keeping football fans on the edge of their seat. We've got two big games at the top of the league now. I think we can officially kind of rule Liverpool out of this title race. Unfortunately, the Jurgen Klopp last dance is probably not going to end with a second trophy this season. Arsenal have Bournemouth at 12:30 on Saturday. Man City host Wolves at 5:30, so both games on the TV. And I suppose for me, the first thing I look at is, do Arsenal have a benefit from kicking off a little early? Do you think that makes a difference that they will be able to set the tone for the weekend, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, you should always focus on yourself mainly, but, you know, if Arsenal get the job done, the pressure is, you know, back on Man City, who are a point behind with a game in hand. And City will be looking at that result as well. So they'll be, you know, they'll be keeping an eye on that. And the atmosphere at the Emirates has come on leaps and bounds in recent seasons. So their fans will be up for it. And there's no room for error anymore. As you said, Liverpool out of the title race. Arsenal will look at, you know, last season, how close they came, and they won't want to make the same mistakes. So yeah, there's no room for error now.
You look at, I think, of the two games this weekend, both teams are at home. So you would expect, you know, if you were doing a coupon, you would probably have both to win. But Bournemouth, to me, looks like a real potential banana skin. I mean, they are so quick on the counter-attack. They've got very athletic forward players that I think can really hurt a team in transition. Do you think that's a concern for Arsenal, the fact that they will have lots of the ball? You know how Arsenal will play. They will camp in the opposition's half. But I look at players like Antoine Semenyo and Justin Cliver and Dominic Solanke and think they could have a field day if Arsenal are going to push too many men forward.
Absolutely. They've been super, super impressive this season under Adoni Iraola. And as you said, Solanke, Semenyo, Kluivert, really good players. As for Semenyo, I played against him in secondary school, and I can tell you, as I played at left back, he's rapid, absolutely rapid. And, you know, to see him, you know, playing in the Premier League is great. And, you know, at the back, Marcus Sensi as well. Yeah, it's a potential banana skin game. It really is. You know, everyone forgets, it might be easy to forget, there are only a few points behind European spots as well. You know, one behind Chelsea, two behind West Ham, a couple behind Newcastle and Man United as well. So there is, you know, there's big motivation even for Bournemouth, not only to upset the title race, but to give themselves a good chance at a European finish.
What have you made of Arsenal in recent weeks? Because they had that little bit of a blip. You know, they fell out of the Champions League. They lost against Aston Villa at home, and they were pretty poor that day. They seem to have bounced back in pretty good fashion. And I think, from my perspective, I was looking at this and seeing the last couple of seasons where Arsenal really tailed off towards the end, and of, you know, the sort of that year of the Amazon documentary a couple of years ago where they were in the top four and they ended up throwing it away and Tottenham got in. Then the next year, you know, they were clear favourites to win the title with 10 games to go and dropped a lot of points towards the end of the season. I was worried after that Bayern Munich game and then after the Aston Villa game that we were going to see a replication of that and Arsenal would again falter with sort of this 10 to 8 games left of the season. Do you think that you've seen since that point that they've bounced back in a way that they will from now to the end of the season keep in this title race? Even if they don't win it, they'll maintain, you know, the ability with, say, a game to go to still win the league?
Absolutely. Again, you know, they would have hoped to have learned their lesson from last season. Obviously, the Champions League is very disappointing. I think a lot of fans, even though it was their first time back in Champions League for many, many years, would have been, you know, hoping to beat Bayern Munich, who lost their German title to Bayer Leverkusen. Yes, I mean, the Aston Villa game as well, that was a shaky point. But as you say, they've sort of got back on track. And I think one of the main focal points is Declan Rice in the middle, is someone that you can always depend on, which they may not have had in seasons prior. So I think that's a big thing. And I think, you know, it's a straight shootout now between them and Man City again. But I think they're better equipped to get the job done this time.
We'll talk a little bit about Man City now, and then we'll have a look at the run-ins to the end of the season. But they've got Wolves, who I think are a pretty hit and miss team. I mean, they've had a very good season. You know, I think most people had Wolves pegged to finish in the sort of bottom five or six at the start of the season when Julian Mopetegu left and Gary O'Neill came in. Gary O'Neill also felt like a bit of a cheaper appointment. You know, it felt like they weren't necessarily ambitious. How wrong we'd be with that. Wolves have had a really good year. They did actually defeat Man City back in September. Do you think that they will pose a significant threat to Man City, or do you think this will be kind of, you know, a routine home win?
I'm expecting a routine home win, to be honest with you. I think, you know, when Guardiola gets his teams to lock in, they lock in. And that's the scary thing. I think for, you know, Liverpool can, you know, confirm that themselves with their many title run-ins. It's just when this Man City team gets going, they're very hard to stop. But Wolves have been very impressive as well. It's a bit like Bournemouth, where they sort of crept up on, you know, the middle of the table, and they do have some weapons. But I just think at the Etihad, you know, the season's at the crunch time, I just expect Man City to smother them, to be honest with you.
Where do you think Wolves can hurt Man City, though, if there's an area? I mean, we talked about Bournemouth and their sort of pace on the counter-attack. Is there anything in this Wolves team that you think they can hurt Manchester City and potentially, you know, get an early goal and scrap to get a point or even a victory come the end? Or do you just think that this Man City team is so strong that it'll be very hard for Wolves' weapons to be able to get anything from this game?
I think, you know, in the channels especially, they've got some good technicians. But at the back as well, they've got some big defenders. You know, Kilman especially, he gets his head on some things. So maybe set pieces is their best route to maybe to get Man City early, get down the channels, win some corners, win some free kicks, you know, relieve themselves of some pressure. Yeah, there's definitely ways they can, but I just expect Man City to smother them and get the job done pretty convincingly.
So we'll look at the run-ins now. We'll start with Man City. They have four games left this season. Wolves this weekend, which we've already discussed. They've got Fulham away, Spurs away, and West Ham at home. Arsenal have three games left, Bournemouth at home, Man United away, Everton at home. Which do you think has the harder run in? I mean, do you see any stumbling blocks for either teams there?
I'm leaning more towards Arsenal having the harder run in. I think, you know, Bournemouth have got something to play for, especially, again, as I mentioned earlier, with, you know, a win or two, and they're well in with a chance of getting maybe the last Europa Conference League spot. You know, Man United away isn't an easy game, even if they are playing the way they're playing at the minute. And Everton, again, even though they're a little bit clear at the bottom of the relegation zone, they'll want to make certain of it. Whereas, you know, Man City, the teams they're playing, see, you know, Wolves haven't really got anything to play for, same as Fulham. Spurs, obviously, they want to kind of solidify their space in a European spot, but I don't think they're at much threat. And West Ham season just feels like it, you know, it died with the defeat to Leverkusen, to be honest with you.
Jack, look at Spurs away from Man City is the potential point they fall. I mean, I think you've got Spurs on the one hand do not want Arsenal to win the Premier League, and I'm sure they'll be very disappointed to win that game if it hands Arsenal the title. But I just look at that and think Man City have a bit of a mental block going at the Tottenham, because they just seem to struggle there, you know, so much. Yeah. It's just not a ground that they seem to enjoy.
Yeah, that is the one game for me when I look at that where they could have trouble. But again, I'm looking at Arsenal and think that, you know, as you said, the Bournemouth game and the Man United away is where I think they're going to have the most problems, to be honest with you. But no, that Spurs game, they, as you say, they have a mental block. Have they won there? I'm not sure if they've won there or they've come close. But, you know, yeah, that's the one game that they'll have their eye on.
Okay, well, we'll talk a little bit about Manchester United now, because there's a lot happening in the world of Manchester United, as there always is. But, you know, considering they're a team that's sort of sat outside the top five in the Premier League, we talk about them a lot. There's reports that Sir Jim Ratcliffe has basically put the whole squad up for sale, bar Kobbie Mainoo, Rasmus Højlund and Alejandro Garnacho. What do you make of that sort of story? The fact that there could just be a complete fire sale, you know, for sale tags on pretty much every single player at Old Trafford?
I think it is needed. Again, you know, there are some big players still, you know, like Casemiro, a massive name, but I think it is time for him to move on. you know, at the back, especially defensively. There's a lot of players, you know, Wan-Bissaka, you could say maybe should have been moved on a summer ago, you know, Harry Maguire. I think that's the right thing to do. And they've highlighted three players that, you know, should really be the future of Man United. So obviously that's your, you know, that's your, not necessarily the core, as they need people at the back as well. But in terms of midfield and attack, those are the three players that you want to build around.
So you're expecting this summer almost a full rebuild. I mean, rebuild is kind of an American sports term, isn't it? Where you tank, quote unquote. Obviously, you can't do that in English football. But do you think Man United are looking at this as we're going to burn it down, you know, to the bare minimum, and then we're going to add in little bits of quality, and it's going to take 2 or 3 years for us to get to where Arsenal are right now? I think Arsenal feels like the logical model to follow. You know, you look when Arteta came in after Unai Emery, and it felt like the club from that point has slowly built up every season and got to the point where they are now, where they are actually one of the best teams in Europe.
Yeah, I mean, I think Sir Jim Ratcliffe has looked at, you know, Man United's transfer dealings, especially in years gone by, and they hemorrhage money. They really do. And, you know, they're going to take big losses on certain players like Antony, for example, when his time comes to leave the club. Potentially Sancho, maybe they'll give Sancho another chance under a new manager again. Like, if you're looking at that front end of the pitch, you've got Mino in midfield and you've got Højlund and Garnacho in attack. Sancho could be the third man. You know, if Rashford goes, they could then turn back to Sancho and say, look, it's time to, you know, pay off the transfer fee. But I do think they need to. And I think obviously with Dan Ashworth coming in, they're going to lean heavily on him to help identify the right players and get the right deals for the club. And I do think they're really going to, you know, gut the team as best as they can, but it's going to be a process. It's not going to be possible in one summer. I think, you know, if Ten Hag does go, the managerial, you know, appointment has to be spot on again as well. Like, they're going to have to, you know, give that manager time and money to get it right.
What do you make of Jadon Sancho? You mentioned him there last night. Played brilliantly for Borussia Dortmund in the Champions League. Looks like, when you see him play like that, it looks like one of the best wingers in Europe. Certainly, potentially one of the best wingers in Europe. If I am Manchester United, the higher ups there, I am looking at this player going, he has to be part of this team. He has to be part of what we're doing moving forward. There's been a massive transfer outlay for him. He's proven himself time and time again that he is a quality player. Yes, it hasn't quite worked since he's moved to Manchester United, but we know there's potentially a change in terms of the manager. If Erik ten Hag was to stay at Manchester United, you'd think surely you'd have to get them both in a room and fix that problem. But if it's a new manager coming in, surely it's Jadon Sancho, clean slate, start again, because he is an elite talent. He's the sort of player that is very hard to get. And if you've got him there at your club and you're getting rid of him because, you know, there's some sort of issue behind the scenes last season, surely you can fix that, because we know how good of a player he is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's a player that should excite most people, actually. You know, when he came to the Premier League, I think England fans as a whole were hoping that he could really kick on, because he should really be a key cog to Gareth Southgate's team heading into these Euros. Absolutely. I do think it comes down to the manager. I think the Ten Hag, maybe that ship has sailed, but under a new manager, there's a clean slate. And I think Sancho should take it. I know Dortmund have been good to him. They'll always be good to him. And if, you know, if it comes to it again, they'll undoubtedly take him back again, whether that's on loan or a permanent, you know, at a discounted price as well. But yeah, I think Man United will be looking at Sancho thinking they need to find a spot for him. I think the talent's there. And again, if Rashford does leave, I think PSG were the team that are quite linked with him, and obviously with Mbappe potentially heading to Real Madrid. So I think Man United will be looking internally and thinking, if we can get Sancho straight and get him firing, he could be the main player. He has that potential. He has that quality. There's not many better on the ball in world football than Jadon Sancho.
And we've talked a little bit about Erik ten Hag, but this weekend they've got Palace away, and Palace have caught a little bit of form, haven't they? They look like Oliver Glasner's sort of got them trending in the right direction. I think they'll be a very good team next season, but this feels to me like it has Crystal Palace win written all over it. It has a feeling of when Ole Gunnar Solskjaer went to Watford, you know, his last game at Manchester United, where everything kind of came tumbling down. It's felt like this house of cards at Manchester United has been waiting to tumble. To be honest, you could argue it probably has tumbled already, but it certainly feels like it's on the way down. Do you think this could be the final nail in the coffin this weekend, even though they got the FA Cup final, which is obviously the most important game, and if they win that, maybe that would right some of the wrongs of this season. But it feels like to me this could be the game where everyone goes, yeah, it's not worked. We need to have a fresh change.
Absolutely. I mean, the styles are completely different. You know, look at the amount of, you know, shots and touches that Man United give up, you know, per game, whether it's against, you know, Bournemouth, West, it doesn't matter who the opposition is. Man United just seem to give up so much of the ball in and around their own penalty area shots. And Palace, again, as you said, under Oliver Glasner, super impressive. I've liked him since his Frankfurt days when he, you know, brushed us aside, West Ham aside in the Europa League, and then won the competition. And he's really getting the best out of people like Mateta as well, which is a player that I've always been interested in. It's good to see him fit and fire. And it's a high energy style, lots of pressure. They've got good technicians. I think Palace will, as much as, you know, historically they shouldn't be, I think Palace will fancy themselves as favourites a little bit. And as you say, it does have that Solskjaer feel at Watford where it's going to come tumbling down. And I think regardless, as you mentioned, the FA Cup final, I think a change is going to be made.
I do worry about that FA Cup final, because if Man City turn up that day and play at 100%, you've got to worry about that Manchester United team. I mean, they were pathetic in that game against Coventry. Was it last weekend or the weekend before? But it wasn't good in the FA Cup semi-final. But we'll talk now about your team, David Moyes at West Ham United. It feels like, from the outside looking in, that his time at West Ham has been overall positive. You know, he's won a European competition. They've had runs in Europe in my life. You know, West Ham have not really been a European team in my life until David Moyes came in. You know, I've always seen them as a sort of lower mid-table Premier League team who might have a good year and finish in the top eight, but generally not a team that's going to threaten the status quo at the top of the league. Whereas under David Moyes, they have started to do that. I know it happened a little bit under Slaven Bilic as well prior. How should fans reflect on his time at the club? And also, do you think his time is up at West Ham?
I think no one can deny that, you know, David Moyes has done a fantastic job, an unbelievable job, a job that, you know, no one could have imagined him pulling off, especially with West Ham's history and what they were going through before him. His time is up. His time is up. I think it's time for the club to move in a different direction. There's a lot of changes going on behind the scenes, especially with Tim Steiden, the technical director, and the way West Ham are going. And again, like Man United, West Ham are a team that hemorrhage a lot of money on transfers, money losses. And, you know, David Moyes has built a really good, you know, first 11, you know, Paqueta, Bowen, especially. I think Bowen is, for me, he's one of my, you know, he's one of the best wingers, in my opinion, my biased opinion, in the Premier League. And I just, when you look beyond that, you know, when push came to shove this season, you know, Leverkusen at home in that game, it was a fantastic first half of football. I think it's the best first half of football I've seen West Ham play in a long time. But when it came to the team tiring, you know, David Moyes looks back at his bench, and it's a bench that he has built, and he doesn't trust anyone. And I think that's one of the biggest, that's one of his biggest downfalls, is that he likes his squad small and he doesn't trust a lot. So he seems to flog the same players again and again and again. Again, you know, fantastic, fantastic achievements. You know, three consecutive European tours, three consecutive quarterfinals, a semi-final and a trophy. Outstanding. And he's a West Ham legend, no matter what. It doesn't matter. David Moyes is a West Ham legend, but last year's cup win papered over a lot of cracks. I would say that the cracks started to show before the World Cup in 2022 and even into the season prior. You know, last season, West Ham nearly got relegated. I think people forget, nearly got relegated. It was that bad. And that was with, you know, Declan Rice, Lucas Paqueta, you know, all these players that are very capable of, you know, great things. This season, we started very well again. But it just, again, it tailed off. In January, there was a chance to strengthen. They brought in Calvin Phillips. You know, if he had more football in his legs, I reckon that could have been a good signing. But they also got rid of Saeed Benrahma and you know, Pablo Fornals, and didn't replace them. So again, when it came to Leverkusen, he's looking out wide with Paqueta out suspended and Emerson out suspended. Who's going to change the game? Maxwell Cornet, you would have thought, could have changed the game. But again, he Moyes signed him and we haven't seen him. And I think that's the problem. I think fans are frustrated now. They see a club that's changing. They see a club capable of attracting good, talented players, players that are capable of playing a more expansive brand of football. And I think they just want to try. I think that's the main thing. There's no harm in trying.
When I watch West Ham, I look at them as kind of a bit of a throwback under Moyes. They're a team that doesn't seem to enjoy possession. You know, they don't like to do much beyond sort of sit in, be compact, be difficult to beat. The problem at the minute is they're actually quite easy to beat. You know, they've thrown in some pretty stinking performances, to be fair. Is the style of play a problem? To me, that's always been the underlying issue with David Moyes, that the results in Europe have kind of papered over the fact that the football is pretty dire. I think as well in this modern Premier League, I would say that West Ham are one of the only clubs, certainly established Premier League clubs, that play such a negative style of football that just isn't pleasing on the eye at all.
Absolutely. It's a massive problem. And I know a lot of pundits especially go, you know, what more do you want? You get the results. And that is hard to argue against. Like, he has got the results prior, like beforehand. But again, a club like West Ham, as I mentioned before, attracts some really talented football players. Mohamed Kudus especially is unbelievable. And no doubt in a season or two, he'll be off to Liverpool or someone like that. Paqueta again, Man City. You've got Bowen. You know, Alvarez in the midfield, there's players all over the pitch. I think fans look at it and just think, if we could just get a manager who, as you say, has his style, wants to attack, I think West Ham are capable of more, absolutely. As you said, with David Moyes, he likes to keep it tight at the back. He likes to sit in, he likes to counter. The only issue is when teams aren't giving you that inch to counter, it's really bad. You know, we were 4-0 down against Palace inside half an hour, I think it was. And West Ham just didn't have an answer. They rarely do have an answer, unfortunately. But yeah, style was a massive, massive problem. And I think, again, West Ham should not be paralysed by their past. They have been bitten in the past with, you know, Pellegrini. I would argue, you know, in hindsight, that was quite a lazy appointment, in my opinion, in hindsight. I think they should look at Palace as well and look at Glasner. I think, you know, it's worth a try. What's, you know, there's no harm in trying. And if, you know, a season or two's time, we're back down in relegation fights, you can hold your hands up and say, you know, fair enough, maybe we made a mistake. But I think fans look at it and see the money that gets invested, the size of the club. And I think they look at a squad that is capable of more and they don't want to go to a football game and, you know, sit 10 men behind the ball and, you know, soak up pressure. It's a dangerous game, especially as you say, West Ham are easy to beat sometimes and defensively shaky, you know. David Moyes seems to pride himself on keeping it defensively tight, but it's a team that can see so many goals.
We'll talk now a little bit about the relegation scrap. It's for Alava relegation scrap. I think as a Sunderland fan, it really speaks to me, a relegation scrap, because we had so many years of relegation scraps. At the minute, though, you've got Burnley, Luton and Forest all separated by just 2 points. Do you think we're going to have a survival Sunday at the end of the season, or do you think it'll be sorted before then?
Absolutely. It's going to go down to the final game in the season. I mean, I think Forest are probably hoping on their appeal they might get a point or two shaved off of their deduction. But yeah, no, I definitely see it going down to the final game of the season.
Luton face Everton on Friday night, Burnley of Newcastle at home, and Forest are away at Sheffield United. So all three seem to have winnable games. Do you think this will be a pivotal weekend for the season?
Massively. Again, you know, Everton, they're quite a bit away from the relegation zone at the minute, so maybe they can afford to ease off it a little bit. So Luton might fancy their chances. In Newcastle, again, they're, you know, they can get a European spot, but there's nothing really to play for. Absolutely. This is, I think, as you said, all winnable games. And I think it's possible. Maybe you can stick a bet on and earn a fair amount of money on that. And again, it will push it towards the final game of the season.
if you look at them teams down there, I have been really critical of Burnley all season. I feel like Vincent Kompany, it took him far too long to realise that he couldn't play the way that he played in the Championship. But what I will say is he has, in the last sort of couple of months, began to adapt his playing style. And while there have been some nightmare moments, I'm looking at the goalkeeping situation and some of the goals have conceded, generally their play has been pretty good over the last couple of months. I look at them at the bottom of this league and think, of the teams down there, they are the one that I think has the best chance because they are the only one to me that looks like they're in half decent form. What do you think? Do you think it's Forest is the favourite because they've got the points, they could also get more points back, and they've also got definitely the best squad of the three? Or do you think Burnley or even Luton have a chance out of the three?
I reckon there's going to be a twist. I think Forest are going to go down. I think they're going to be looking over their shoulder. And as you say, Burnley have a way of playing. They, you know, quickly realised it wasn't working and they've adapted. And I think that's one of the positive things about Kompany. It's probably why he would be on the list to replace De Zerbi at Brighton should he have left. I agree with you. I think Burnley are best equipped.
What do you make of Luton? You know, they in January Christmas time looked like the team that was going to come out, but their form has really dipped sort of in this latter end of the season. I mean, some of their performances, that Brentford game, that was a must-win home game. And they laid an egg, got me. Was it 5-1 in the end they lost that day? Yeah. To me, it looks like the writing's on the wall for them. I don't see them picking up a win from now at the end of the season. I really don't. I don't think they're capable of winning another game this season.
No, I agree. And again, when you look at Burnley in particular, who have lost only one game in their last five, as you said, they laid an egg, and I think they'll be laying, you know, plenty more in the weeks to come. Yeah, they have tailed off massively. I expect them to go down. I do think it's going to be between Forest and Burnley, and I think Burnley are going to get the edge.
Okay, well, you heard it here first. We'll clip that one up in a few weeks when Burnley don't win another game this season and Luton win their final three games and survive. But thanks, Josh, for joining me this one. It's been a pleasure talking all things Premier League, all things football. And please, everyone, remember to subscribe, like this podcast as well, and you know, comment if you disagree. I'm sure there's plenty to disagree with in what we've said today. And yeah, thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks, Josh, for joining me.